What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today, we're going to do a bit of a marathon review. I did a bit of a marathon preview talking about goals and fueling strategies and all that. And I will review all of that as we go through this. You don't have to go back and listen to that, but that might be something you want to do. I'm just going to share right off the front here that I felt a little tiny bit cringe making all of these notes about how my day went, kind of thinking like, who cares about your day, dude? You're just like standard 30s dude who decided to run a marathon. But I'm going to tell you the story of the day and basically how it went. We'll go through a bit of what my goals were and fueling strategy and all that. We'll talk about basically how it went. I have a section called Being Disappointed is the Fun Part, which is a lesson that I'm working on how I'd like to articulate it, but you know, this will be my first stab at it. Essentially, a discussion on goals and hobbies and fun and consistency and how we can manage all of those things to make the most of enjoying our hobbies. And then I'll talk a little bit about what's next for me without, you know, I'll try not to get too cringed out by talking about myself, but here we go. So let's talk about the story of the day. And let's start from the day before. I had a friend and his fiance sleeping over and running it with me. My friend he's like a 3:15 marathoner. He's in insane shape. And he was toying between giving this 100% and going for his own PR or just running it with me for my first marathon. And really kind of him to run it with me. I think that, you know, I will say now that was a really, really enjoyable thing. One of my best friends since high school, played sports together, and, you know, he is, you know, gotten more into running later in life, and he's super duper fit, and so for him to kind of sacrifice his day to spend it together was awesome, and I really appreciate that. On a side note, I sleep terribly the night before, like, something big. You know, I tend to get really excited, and just, I don't get a lot of sleep. You know, I would call it anxiety, but it's just like a combination of nerves and excitement and a bit of anxiety, sure. And then you combine that with the fact that I don't sleep well when I have guests. Again, this is a me thing. You know, when I have guests, I tend to just not sleep well. Something about the evening is out of my routine, and, you know, I don't settle like I might otherwise. And so I slept like 2 hours the night before the race, like 2 or 3 hours, just a terrible night's sleep. But I don't, you know, sometimes we can have sleep anxiety where we get a bad night's sleep and then we get an even worse night's sleep because we're having anxiety about having bad sleep. That second part didn't happen because I wasn't so worried about it ruining my performance. I've done enough races that I know that you can still perform incredibly well even after one night of not so great sleep. And if you listen to like a lot of top endurance athletes, they experience the same thing where they don't get great sleep the night before. And it doesn't really make a huge difference between adrenaline and caffeine. You tend to be able to perform on the day. So I wasn't so worried about that. It's not like I was sitting there like, oh my God, there goes my marathon performance because I didn't get a good night's sleep. I mean, it would have been nice to, but I wasn't so worried about it. Got up at 4, took the dogs out, you know, prayed to the poop gods. Had breakfast at 5, you know, for people that are interested in this, I had, you know, a meal that I normally have, and the race starts at 7. So for me, I need at least 2 hours. I'd rather be not fully digested and hungry again, but I definitely more so fear starting the race, like with like burping up breakfast than I do saying, okay, maybe I need to have a gel right before I start because I'm hungry again, you know? So had some oatmeal and raisins. That is something I know that I digest well, sits well. And it's a thing that I typically have. And so, you know, in the goal of not having anything new on race day and keeping things as standard and predictable as possible, I went with that. We had an Uber at 5:30 come to the house to pick us up. Again, the race started at 7. We wanted to get there at 6. Just had a backpack full of, you know, like one of those strap bags that I was planning on just leaving there and donating, full of some stuff. Sipped on some sports drink on the way there just to stay hydrated and keep carbs and sodium in a good spot. Immediately when we got there, ran to the porta potties and started packing my belt. You know, I as far as gear for the marathon, I toiled between, you know, between me and you, I don't know how people have no gear for the marathon, like no water or no belt, no vest, they're just raw dogging it. And I think if you are an elite athlete and you're getting bottle service, meaning like you're getting bottles handed to you on the course, okay, you don't need anything. But my advice to like everybody else is to have stuff on you, you know, like I just see people with nothing on them, just like no water on them, you know, okay, maybe they have some gels on them, but dude, no water on you at all. No water bottle to like fill up. You're just going to hydrate with the cups that you get kind of randomly. It just, it doesn't seem like, it's not something I could do personally, knowing the kind of delta between how much water I'd be drinking if I just grabbed cups versus how much water I probably should be drinking to perform optimally. For me, a running belt with soft flasks in it is my preferred way of running a road marathon. I think if I was running trails potentially, I might maybe opt for the vest. You know, it depends on a lot of things, but I'm in love with running belts. I just think they're super duper comfortable. So that was my quick note on belts. So hit the porta potty. The poop gods blessed thee from above. It was just, I'm very thankful. Thank you guys for blessing me. Really appreciate that. However, the porta potty, if you've ever done a marathon or like a bigger marathon, you know, Philly's like a probably second tier marathon, not as big as stuff like New York and Chicago, but still big, like 20,000 people. The bathroom lines are always crazy, right? There's almost never enough porta potties. And so you kind of get out of the porta potty and you usually kind of get back online. That's what they say. It's like after the porta potty, you get back online because it's going to take you that long and you might want to go again. I don't really think we had time for that, but the minute I step out of the porta potty, I walk over to my buddy and I was putting two gels in the back of my tights and I realized that my tights were on back, inside out. And I'm like, oh my God, my tights are on inside out. I need to get butt naked essentially and, you know, put these tights, you know, right side out. And so I look at my buddy, I'm like, we got to get back online. Except during the period that we were online for the porta potty, the line for the porta potty like tripled. And it was already maybe 35 minutes out from the race at this point. And I was like, there's no way. There's no way. We also had to go fill up our bottles with water. And I was like, there's no way. There's no way we're going to make it. And so I told him to get back online. And I was like, let me go look around to see if there's like a secluded, it was still dark. It was 6:30 in the morning. And so I just ran over onto it like a nearby baseball field that had like a dugout and just actually it did not have a dugout, it had like the behind the base. Gosh, I'm showing my lack of baseball knowledge here. Behind the base there is the fence behind home plate, and then sometimes there's like a netting that you can't see. Anyway, went over there. Quickly stripped down, switched, and was very happy that I did that because waiting online for the porta potty was not going to happen. So it was kind of butt naked in front of 20,000 people. All right. Where are we here? Yeah, cool. And also the race organizers said that all of your bladders need to be empty. So if you're bringing, sorry, not your physical bladder, but like if you're wearing a vest, the water bladder needs to be empty. Like as if you're going to the airport, you can't come through security with water already packed, which bothered the heck out of me, frankly, because I wanted to make my soft flasks full of sports drink, you know, a sports mix. And I wanted to do that beforehand and I just wanted to have it on me, but they said you couldn't do that. So I brought them all empty and I had to like mix up. It's like, it looks, I was like dealing drugs, you know, making these bottles at 6:45 before the race starts, when in reality, the security didn't care at all. There was no security. I could have easily just filled my bottles. And so my advice, or at least for myself, for future marathons, is if that is a rule that you hear, don't listen to it. And if they make you pour it out, fine, pour it out and then do what you would have done anyway. But I would just be mixing my bottles beforehand. I can't believe that they said to do that. All right, let's speed this up a little bit. Caffeine went down at 6:45, got to the start line at 7. Our corral kicked off around 7:20. Quick recap of what my goals were. My goals were to run this at roughly a 7:20. Oh, sorry, roughly a 9:20-ish per mile. So roughly 9:20-ish. We had a little bit of a strategy where certain parts would go a little faster, certain parts would go a little bit slower, and our goal was to finish somewhere between 4:05 and 4:10. With my heart really being on 4:10, like 4:05 felt ambitious. I thought we might go 4:20 in the beginning. And then, you know, I just thought that it would be really, really hard by the end, just based on the data from training. We were aiming to stick a little bit closer to 915 for the first 6 miles because the first 6 miles of the course are pretty flat and pretty chill. My fuel recap, just what my goals were in terms of fueling, was a 40 gram gel every 30 minutes, a 500 milliliter bottle with carbs and sodium in it every 4 miles, with 1 gram of sodium per liter of water, so half a gram of sodium per bottle. And I had 3 bottles on me. And so those 3 bottles were going to get me through the first, let's say, half marathon. And then my plan was to just refill. You know, they had those Noon is that company of electrolyte company. They had that at the aid stations. So my plan was to fill up a bottle every 4 miles. So I'd stop at every other aid station on the back half, and I would just very quickly fill up the bottle and then keep going. My goal was roughly 100 grams per hour of carbohydrates, roughly 1 liter, maybe like 750 mils per hour. And then again, 0.75 or 750 milligrams of sodium per hour. And then I had a caffeinated gel at the halfway point. Now, I want to say, before we get into the race, I am very proud of my race, my pre-race prep and everything it took to feel ready to roll at the start, right? Standing in our corral, I felt I was prepared with the training. I was prepared with the gear. I was prepared with, you know, all of the little things, you know, that you need to remember. And this is my first marathon. And it turns out they're like, training really hard for the marathon is important, of course, or let's just say the training is very important. But there is also little things like, how are you going to fuel? How are you going to pack all of that on you or some of it on you? And then what's your plan? What clothes are you going to wear? You know, don't forget to like tape up your nipples so they don't chafe. And like just all of these like little things, because it's such a long race. Yes, it's about fitness, but there are other things that can go wrong, from like blisters and chafing and this and that. And you have to carry more on you, or, you know, if that's, you know, like I said, some people don't do that. I recommend carrying some amount of your food and water on you, but okay. So I did feel like, hey, this is a different beast. You know, you show up to a 5K or 10K, you can have a gel 30 minutes before and then just run the race. And there's just like not nearly as much to think about. So all of those things that fall into the category of stuff to think about because this is a marathon, I'm very proud of myself. The carb load went great. I brought everything I needed. Food and fuel were on point. I wasn't standing there in the corral thinking, oh, I forgot blank, or oh, I should have done blank. I felt good. I crushed that part of the plan. What I would say is the noon that they had on course that I was refilling my bottle with was disgusting. It was like maybe the most vile thing I put in my mouth ever. Like, I just don't know how this is the product that they decided was the best thing to have. It was a lemon lime noon. And okay, maybe some people like it. This is obviously, of course, taste is subjective, but oh my God. Thank God. One of my very, very few superpowers is I have an iron stomach, and it just didn't matter at the time. But the first sip I had, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to drink this for the next, you know, 13 miles or 14 miles or whatever. I'm like, this is literally disgusting. So it's all good. All right, let's get to the race. I'm going to break it up into sections, 4 sections. The first section is the first 6 miles. It started in the heart of the city near the Rocky Steps at this Philly Art Museum. It was an awesome start. The beginning of the course was flat. We were cruising, good crowd. You know, I just moved here. I moved 20 minutes outside of Philly. Until then, I had never been to Philly. I've been to Philly a couple times since living here, but, you know, I was very much looking forward to, you know, immersing myself in the experience, getting to know the city a little bit through running this marathon. So no music, just taking it in. We had perfect weather, mid 40s, a little overcast. It was perfect. And for the first hour, the boys were dialed in. We were at a 9:14 pace. We had a little chit chat. There were some good signs on the course. There were good views, good crowd, good energy, just like really, really enjoyable experience. I wrote some of my favorite signs. Again, this is my first marathon, so I bet you there are just cliche marathon signs, and so I don't think that these signs were remotely unique to the Philly Marathon. The only ones that were unique to the Philly Marathon were the millions of signs that had to do with the Eagles. The Eagles were on at 4 o'clock that day, so there were like so many signs like, hurry up, the Eagles are on later, or like anti-Cowboys fan signs, which, you just love, because hating on Cowboys fans is great. Doesn't matter who you are. But some of my favorite signs were, I love the one from Holes, you know, in Holes where it's like, I'm tired, Grandpa. And then the guy's like, that's too bad. And so there were a lot of those, which, so I'm guessing that was like not a unique sign that people have done that one before. I personally love when people make a big, like a stick with a blow up head of whoever's running, and it's like a terrible picture of them. Like, I don't know why, but I find that a just very endearing thing that your friends do is get a really stupid picture of you and put it up on us. I just could see that being something my friends would do. And just out of love, you know? And so I always love seeing those. They make me chuckle. I know that that's just like an act of love, and that's awesome. There were some signs that were about basically like, you're running better than the government. I thought that was very timely. Other signs that said, don't trust that fart, which I thought is hysterical. It's just that didn't happen to me, but I know that that can happen. And then I think my favorite ones were like basically signs that said anything but therapy, huh? And it's just like, it's like kind of true, where like there's a shred of truth there, where like people get into running in their like midlife, like for, you know, again, sorry, I don't seriously mean instead of therapy. None of this is serious, but I do think that there's a bit of that. Now, getting to section two of the race, let's say mile 6 to mile 15. After the first 6 miles, there were a few notable hills from 6 to 15. This is where it was, I don't want to say really hilly, but as far as the course went, this was the hilliest part. So some miles we were at like a 940 if we were hitting some big hills, and other miles we were at an 857. I think we finished 6 to 15 with an average of 921. So very much on pace for a 405 still, very much on pace. Still no music. You know, I made this like a beautiful, like 4 hour playlist with, of course, I wasn't going to listen to it the whole time. I also saved a couple good podcasts that I want to listen to. But once we got out there, I didn't want to run with any music. I just didn't. I wanted to be there. And I'm not saying that if somebody listens to music that they're not enjoying the full experience. You enjoy it however you want to enjoy it. It felt right for me to not have any music on. Like, I didn't actually have any drive to turn on music. And between me and you, sometimes when I get really tired, the music doesn't help, because I'm like so zoned out due to fatigue that I'm not like, it's not like I'm, it's funny, like music benefits me the most when I'm fresh, but like I'm fresh, so I don't necessarily need the boost of motivation per se. So it kind of was an interesting thing where, I don't know, if I had to run it again, I might just not have headphones at all. I know that sounds serial killer status, and to me it would have originally, but I just didn't feel any drive. And at no point in the race did music help me. We'll get to that, because I needed help. getting into mile 10, 13, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I was feeling a little tired, but I was starting to feel like 405 is in the cards. My heart rate was super stable. For me, that's like in that low, mid 160s. I know that once I get mid 70s, close to 180s, that's when we're starting to think, okay, there's a time limit on this thing. But me in the mid 160s feels mega sustainable, notably sub threshold, not what I would call distressing at all. So it's not like I was feeling 100%, but I was feeling like, you know, actually a part of my brain was thinking we should have went for 4 hours, you know, like, or, you know, hey, you're going to be under 405. That's what my brain started to do. Another part of my brain was saying the more logical side, which is, it's too early to know that. Just keep chugging along, right? It's too early to say that. Definitely don't change your strategy. Do not just start going faster. But I started to have real faith that I was going to keep this up. You know, sometimes I've never run a marathon before. So what the hell do I know? Like, of course, during training, there's some experience, but nothing simulates race day. And so being 16 miles in here and thinking, I'm tired, but like, I'm going to keep this up. Like, that was my feeling, was I'm tired, but full of confidence. If you stop me on mile 15, then I'm going to keep going at this pace. Now we move on to section 3, mile 16. My quads, both my VMO, just starts cramping out of nowhere, but like, you know, that's what it felt like. I don't think cramping happens technically out of nowhere. It happens progressively and then, you know, all at once, right? And so it felt like my quads were cramping out of nowhere, because for me, let's say mile 15, I felt fine. No quad pain, no feeling of distress. And then mile 16, again, abruptly, they started cramping. And a quick note on cramping. Cramping is not just dehydration. It's not, oh, you need more salt. It's complicated. There's genetic components to it, and yes, hydration and salt play a small role, but it's more likely a neuromuscular fatigue issue. It's more likely just a fatigue thing, and I say just a fatigue thing. It's more than just anything. It's a multifactorial consequence, but for the most part, I'd say we need to start thinking about cramping as a neuromuscular fatigue issue. And to be totally honest, my fueling was on point. I haven't missed a sip of water, a milligram of sodium, a gram of carbohydrates. I haven't missed a beat, and I'm at the upper end of where I should be here. So it was not that. And I've always been a cramper. I played, you know, soccer, basketball, lacrosse to, I don't want to say a super high level, but a high enough level where I have a lot of experience cramping. I cramped in basically every sporting event I've ever played in, ended in some sort of, I'm tired, I'm cramping, right? Like, it's a very common thing for me when I'm pushing hard to cramp. However, it didn't actually happen during training ever, which is something I'm going to talk about with my coach. I'm recording this on Thanksgiving morning, actually, Thursday, and I have a call with my coach on Monday, so we'll talk a bit about this. I think ultimately me cramping is the main topic of conversation with my coach. I'm at mile 16 and I'm thinking to myself, that's not good. You know, my quads are cramping and it's painful. And so I'm telling myself, you know, it'll go away. I just tell myself that. I'm like, it's going to go away. It'll come and go. And that can happen. The cramping can come and go. You can even slow down for a tiny bit, have cramping go away, and then continue running. And that's kind of what happened. So I slowed down mile 16 and 17 down to a 9:35. But by mile 19, my adductors and my hamstrings were cramping too. So now my quads are cramping, my adductors are cramping, my hamstrings are cramping. And there's enough of this race left. I mean, freaking 7 more miles, where the worst case scenario start to creep into my mind. I'm thinking, you're not going to finish. You're going to walk this in. It's going to be a 5-hour day, because with 4 miles left or something, you're going to have to walk. And I was like, would you even do that? Again, in the moment, your mind can be weird. And my mind was like, you wouldn't even do that. You just DNF, just quit. Are you going to have pride walking for an hour and a half? Now, that's me being rude to myself in the moment, you know, and I'm not judging anyone. If you feel that you would have pride, that the prideful thing to do would have been to walk it in, even if you finished in 6 hours, you freaking finished, which, by the way, no, I'm going to back up. I don't like doing this sometimes. Running a marathon is not normal. I don't care if it takes you 7 hours or 2 hours or 8 hours or 6 hours or 5 hours. It's not normal. And you are amazing for doing it. So whenever I talk about times, it's all relative to myself. And I hate that sometimes. I do not want to make anybody who's, let's say I was like, oh, I slowed down to a 9:35 and I was upset with that. It's like, okay, some people might be listening to this who, for them, that's way faster than they go. And I do not want any of that to come through here. I think running a marathon has become normalized, and it is not normal. It is not a normal thing to do. I don't care if you walk, jog it, if you finish. I've coached clients to the 6-hour range. I mean, in some ways, that's even harder. It's even harder because you're on your feet for 6 hours. So I just, everybody out there is amazing. I'm proud of everyone. Just because I would have felt shameful for doing, shameful is the wrong word. I would have been whining and bitching about that happening to me. That doesn't mean I think other people doing that is what I think about them. In the moment, I was angry and I thought, dude, if you have 5 miles to go and you literally are walking, and you walk, let's say you walk 3 miles an hour and you have 5 miles, let's say 6 miles, that's like 2 hours of walking. Are you going to do that? Is finishing worth it in that context? And so that's the thought that's going through my mind. I'm like, you're not going to finish. You're going to walk this in. all of your legs are cramping. Every single step, you are one bad step away from a Charlie horse. Every step I took, all of my muscles tensed, and they got to like a 95% cramp, it felt, every step. However, somehow, we averaged a 9:55 for the next 5 miles. So now we're going, again, I'm saying we're going noticeably slower than the goal, but somehow we're still chugging along at a kind of jog technique. I'm not walking yet, but my technique has shrunk. My stride has shrunk, smaller strides. And I know in my mind, if I move one iota outside of my stride, every muscle in my leg is cramping. My quads have been cramping no matter what, every step. And somehow, some way, by mile 23, we are still on pace for a 4:10 finish. However, this is where things got a little dark. My cramping's getting worse, and right as we hit the start of mile 24, the 4:10 pace group goes by us. And it's almost like, it's just this big manifestation, this big physical manifestation of my goal passing me by, right? Like the girl holding the 4:10, sign, and the group of people trying to finish at 4:10, they just go by us. And I'm watching them. I'm watching my goal go away with that group, right? And so I'm pissed off. And mile 24, I'm straight up shuffling. I'm stopping to walk maybe for 10 to 20 seconds at a time before getting back into my shuffle, whatever you would call it. At this point, I'll be honest with you, at this point, I'm not having fun anymore. I just want to get it over with and go home. My goal is gone. Again, we'll get to the disappointment stuff in a second. I'm sorry if this feels pessimistic. I promise it is wrapped in optimism and fun and happiness. I promise. But mile 24, if you stop me, ask me if I'm having fun, I will tell you absolutely not. I'm pissed. I just want to get it over with, and it feels like there is so much left. I'm not going to lie. Mile 24 felt like 10 miles long. Mile 24 we did at a 10:41 pace, which again, in hindsight, I'm like, dude, the way you were feeling, I can't believe you were still going at that pace. Now, I'm going to say this again, because I'm trying to be honest with everyone, I'm trying to be honest with how I feel, and even, I'm not sure how all this comes out, but this, part of what I was excited for with the marathon was that I knew it was going to be really hard, and it was going to test me emotionally, and it was going to push me to push through pain. However, to me, in the moment, this didn't feel like that. It did not feel like I'm tired, and I have to push myself through it. It felt binary, right? Like my legs were seizing up. I'm not willpowering through that. I'm getting a Charlie horse. This isn't, I'm tired. This isn't, my stomach hurts, or this isn't like my legs feel heavy. This is like my entire leg seized up. I need to walk for 20 seconds. And so it felt like I didn't even get, again, this is what it felt like. It felt like I didn't even get a chance to make myself proud with pushing through discomfort, because this didn't feel like discomfort I could push through. Now, again, upon reflection, I am, even just looking at the splits, I know how I felt on mile 24. The fact that it was a 10:41, I feel a bit better about that. And I think maybe that's BS. Maybe you did push through it. Maybe there still was that pride. Maybe there's still pride to be had with what you did, which was jogging for a few minutes, walking for 10 seconds to let the cramping stop and then start again. Maybe that is what I should be taking that away from that experience, but it didn't, it just felt so binary. It felt like, yeah, my legs seized up. I had to stop moving for multiple times. I had to just like stand there. I'm looking at my, the data right now as I'm talking to you guys, like there are moments where I was just standing still because I was cramping. So if you ask me then, I would tell you, straight up, I'm never doing this again, ever. I'm never doing it again. I'm not having fun anymore. And between me and you, this part of the course, this was the only part of the course I really didn't enjoy. You were basically alone by the water. You weren't exactly alone. There were some people there, but it was a pretty barren part of the course spectator-wise. And this was a really tough, like 3 mile stretch from 21 to 24 because of that. And I knew that Jenna and Emerson were at mile 26. Now, you know, if you've ever run a marathon before, you probably don't want your motivators, your family and friends to be at mile 26, but you'd probably want them earlier, right? Mile 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, something like that. But mile 26 was I didn't care about me. I wanted Jenna and Emerson to not be overly, what is the word I'm looking for? I didn't want them to be overly inconvenienced by trying to find some place that was optimal for me. So I knew I was like, hey, go to the art museum where the finish line is and then walk and find a spot before the finish line and I'll see you guys and it'll be great. The problem is by mile 26, my brain is in a weird place and I'm in a lot of pain and I'm just dying to get this over with. Not only that, but the mile 26 hits a part of the street that's really wide. So if you're running in the middle of the road, the spectators feel pretty far away. And there's a video of me I put on by my stories a couple, like the day after, or I guess on Monday, where you see me running by Jenna and Emerson, and I just look at them and smile, and I can't come over and see them. I'm like, dude, I'm half a mile away from finishing. If I even stop my legs moving for 1 second, they will not start again. So I was a little sad that I didn't get, that I, in that moment, didn't choose to go over there and, you know, hug my wife, kiss my baby. It is what it is. I'm not beating myself up over it. In the moment, I was like, dude, if you stop with the finish line in sight, you will not finish, right? That's what it felt like in the moment. So I looked over, I smiled, I heard them cheering, I appreciated it, but I just kept going. And so ultimately, I finished in a 4:16, and I just wanted to get the hell out of there. In the moment, I really didn't care about the time, because I had already known for the last 40 minutes that I was going to get in between 4:10 and 4:20. Like I had already known 4:10 is not possible. And I had faith in my kind of run for a few minutes and then your legs seize up and then you stop for a second. I'd already had faith that I was going to be able to finish doing that. So I was already kind of just over it. I was like, I don't care about the time. You know, I just want to get out of here. I've been cramping for the last 10 miles. The last 5 miles of the race were the least fun, just spectator wise, energy wise, like the energy of the race. And I just was over it. It wasn't that euphoria of finishing because I had been begging to get it over with for the last several, it just wasn't that, right? It wasn't that thing you think about where you have your arms out and your chest hits the tape and you fall to the ground in tears because you're so proud that you've hit. It just wasn't. It was a slog for the last like over an hour of intense pain and cramping that, okay, I'm just being real with you. I was in that moment, like, let's just get the heck out of here. Now, I want to move on to the next part. How am I feeling about it all 24 hours after, 72 hours after? And I shared on social media that I was disappointed. And I gave a bunch of caveats, and I want to kind of share why I gave those caveats. And so I want to start with the quote that being disappointed is the fun, or being disappointed is the fun part. And I want to back up for a second, and I don't want to get overly meta, overly deep, and I haven't perfectly figured out how to articulate this. So just bear with me as I try to make a point here for the last 10 minutes or so. You know, it's easy to, if you start thinking about what the meaning of life is, sorry that I'm doing this, if you start thinking about it, you can quickly get to a nihilistic place of nothing matters, everything's meaningless. You know, because outside of like core human needs and like biological purposes of procreation and family and community, the things that have meaning are the things that we choose to give meaning to, right? We, again, outside of, I think, things in my life that are just like core, you know, my purpose in terms of work, my family and my community and my friends, you know, what else do we have in our life? Well, we have our hobbies, right? We have the things that we do that are outside of work and our families and our friends. What are our hobbies? And if it's a hobby, that means we've chosen to give it some sort of meaning, right? You give your hobby meaning because that's what makes it fun. You get interested in it, right? You get pleasure from it because you lean into it. Learning more about your hobby, you know, making friends with people who do your hobby, you know, being in a Facebook group about your hobby, like it's fun because you've given it meaning, right? And everyone is allowed to decide how they have fun with their hobbies, right? Like one of my friends, Andre, who was my first videographer ever for social media. I love Andre, and he trained for this. And I'm not picking on him as if he didn't take this seriously at all. I'm not. But he was running it with his girlfriend, and he dressed as Lord Farquaad. You can find him on social media, and he's the man. I love him. That's him in a nutshell. And for him, that's how he has fun with this hobby of running. It's by keeping it light and taking a shot of Fireball along the course and dressing as Lord Farquaad and still pushing himself, but maybe that taking it just slightly less seriously from like a race perspective, more of a vibes and fun, right? And that's how he has fun with his hobbies. There were people there dressed as the Lorax. No, there were two people. Again, you can find them on social media. If you look just through like the Philadelphia Marathon hashtag, you will find them immediately. You'll find my buddy Andre as Lord Farquaad also. I passed the Lorax blowing chunks at mile 16, just throwing up on the side of the course and then getting back on and continuing to run, because for those people, that's how they have fun with it. And that's awesome. It's great, right? And for other people, they take it more seriously and they have a time goal that they want and they take their training more seriously and the fueling more seriously and they have more skin in the game when it comes to performance and, again, everything in between. My dad is a big photographer. It was a hobby. Now it's kind of like a side gig. And he's a big birder. He loves birds. He'll travel to go see a bird. He'll wait, you know, on a trail for hours to see a bird. He'll find the right shot. He'll follow the bird while they're on the trail. Like, you know, so for him, you know, okay, there are other people who are birders that he goes with that take it less seriously, they don't have a bird list that they keep in their phone of every bird they've ever seen, right? And so there's a spectrum of how seriously you take your hobbies, and you fall on that spectrum because you have decided that taking your hobby that seriously is how you make it fun. It's how you extract the most fun with it. I'm a big Arsenal fan, huge soccer fan. But like, you know, it's very easy to be like, well, sports are meaningless. Sports are nothing. They mean nothing in the scheme of life. But by giving it meaning and by being, you know, I love this team. I've loved this team. I've followed this team since I was little. And I watch every game and I have my Arsenal group chat with my buddies. And, you know, I have relationships on social media and, you know, just people in my life that I wouldn't otherwise have if I wasn't more into this. And so, again, for me, being a big Arsenal fan versus like someone who follows more casually, that's how I extract more fun from it. And again, it's all equally meaningless if you want to make it out to be that way, right? Like sports, I don't think have an inherent meaning. You can argue that what I just said, the connection, the human connection that I'm making, all of those things matter a lot. But my point is that when it comes to your hobbies, you know, people will enjoy their hobbies differently. That's all I'm trying to say, right? And for me, when it comes to the hobby of running, my ultimate goal is to continue doing cardio for the rest of my life, to be healthy and to be fit and to, you know, have a healthy heart and stave off metabolic disease and be able to do things with my grandkids and all that jazz. And for me, taking running more seriously is my vehicle for doing that, right? Like, I have my head on straight. I'm not a pro runner. I'm not even, for the amount that I take it seriously, I'm not even good, you know? Like, I take it very seriously. I don't run that much, but I still take my training seriously. But for me, that word vehicle is very poignant. It's very pointed. It's very underlined here. For me, taking it more seriously is my vehicle for doing it for a long time, right? I could just as easily go out for 2 or 3 runs per week with no goals and no paces and no heart rate monitor and be within 90 to 95% as fit as I'll ever be. But if I took that approach, I don't think I'd keep up with running as a hobby. And I don't think I would do what my ultimate goal is, which is running for the rest of my life or doing cardio for the rest. It doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be running, whatever, right? And when you choose that route, when you choose to have skin in the game, you accept an element of vulnerability, right? It's like a relationship. When you choose to invest emotionally in it, you are also more vulnerable to things like disappointment and sadness and failure and all of that, right? You could care less and you'd be protected from those emotions, or you could care more and you could open yourself up to those emotions. And if I go on social media and I say I'm disappointed about how the marathon went, which I did say, but I added a million caveats. If I just went on social media and said, I'm disappointed about the marathon, I'm going to get a million messages that say, oh, it's your first marathon. Don't worry about how you did. Just be proud that you finished it. You know, just showing up to the starting line is the goal. You know, just doing it is the goal. And it's like, that's mostly people projecting how they give meaning to their hobby of running in this context. And that's fine. I love that. And it's also them just like being caring and just saying, hey, I'm being sympathetic to someone who's disappointed. And I want to share a perspective that might give them some good feeling. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But there's a bit of like me being disappointed. Like, I'm disappointed how this race went, but listen to me very carefully. That disappointment is happening underneath an umbrella of me having a really, really good time overall with running as a hobby. I accept the chance to be disappointed because for me, taking a bit more seriously is the vehicle for me to continue doing it at all. So it's all good. Having enough skin in the game to be disappointed sometimes is how it's fun for me. Now, I want to dichotomize this for a second here. I want to paint another side of the picture. For me, for lifting weights, so I lift weights 3 times a week, I run 3 times a week. Right now, with my lifting, I have no goals. I don't actually have the intent to get any bigger or stronger. I am in complete maintenance, longevity. I'm in the like quote unquote, just want to keep doing this phase. And for me, taking my lifting more seriously would not make it more fun. Again, right now, I took my lifting very seriously for a long time, and I appreciate that time. But where I am in my life right now, I don't need the goal. I don't need the goal of getting bigger to go down in my basement and lift. I am at a place now where I can go down and lift, knowing that I'm not going to progress much over the next decade if I don't do more lifting. And that's okay. I can still do it. So I don't need, in this moment, for this thing, I don't need that goal to get myself to do what I really want to do, which is continue lifting. So I don't need that goal as a vehicle to continue doing it. For running, I do. And so that's just highlighting how, you know, specific goals might make things more fun, or they might add unnecessary pressure. They might help you be more consistent. They might make you less consistent. The person and the context matter a ton. You don't need to act the same way for every goal that you have. You might, like right now, I find that if you were like, Jordan, do you want to do a bulking phase and really push yourself to get more muscular? I'm like, no, that would not be fun for me. I don't want to do that. I don't need that goal for lifting to do what I really want, which is just continue lifting. And the difference is for running, if you just said, okay, Jordan, no more races, no more technology, no more tracking your paces. You just kind of got to go in there and do some runs. I wouldn't. So I just want to highlight how it can be different for different goals. You know, I work with people all the time who are doing bulking and cutting. They're already way more muscular than they need to be for health. You don't need that much muscle to get the benefits of muscle for health. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, why are you doing all this bulking and cutting? Why are you trying to get even more muscular, right? You're already as muscular as you'd need to be for health, which again, you can do on like 60 to 90 minutes per week of lifting. And the answer is, for that person, taking it more seriously than just enough to be healthy is the vehicle for them to have fun with it, to stay consistent with it, right? Like, I'm not trying to tell you what your goal should be, but I am biased that most of us should try to really connect with doing this for a long time, right? That's the goal. I'm not telling you that has to be the only or most important thing to you, but I think it should be on the list of important stuff, which is exercise for a long time, exercise till I die, right? And so finding the sweet spot of how much goal setting enhances the process, how much skin in the game, how much taking it seriously makes me do it so that I can get to my ultimate goal of being 80 and having done it for the last 50 years, right? You know, like for other people, instead of bulking and cutting, that bulking and cutting might feel fussy, and finding a really good groove at maintenance and getting, you know, slower progress at maintenance, but without the fuss, might be a better vehicle for longevity. And again, that's where I'm at right now, where I'm like, hey, I don't want to bulk or cut. Taking it that seriously would not make this more fun for me right now. And so, again, I'm not telling you what your goal should be, but I think we should all try to connect with one of the main benefits of exercise, which is health and longevity and function, and try to connect with that. The question is, how do you connect with that, right? Does having goals and taking it more seriously help, or does taking it a little less seriously help? I've worked with plenty of people who take it so seriously that it is poisoning the fun, right? I work with plenty of people for whom taking their fitness less seriously would improve their quality of life via maybe an improvement in body image and food and stress anxiety, and other people who, for them, taking it seriously is their vehicle. No, I think of bodybuilders. Now, I'd say I don't want to overstep and say something crazy like most bodybuilders have a disordered body image and disordered eating, and I wouldn't say that. I would say many do, but there are some people who would look me square in the face and say, hey, taking it this seriously, which is the most serious, is how I stay in the game. It's how I take care of my health for the very long term. Taking it seriously is my vehicle, and I respect that. And again, I think bodybuilding is an extreme example sometimes, but I respect that concept for sure. So I don't want to beat that point to death here. Anything else I wanted to say? Yeah. How seriously you take your hobbies is up to you and what you find fun. The more serious you take it, the more vulnerable you are, but that's the route you choose when you choose to take it seriously. I'm disappointed with how it went, but it's all under the umbrella of having a great time with my hobby, right? Again, for me, taking it seriously is, for now, how I've been so consistent. I haven't missed a run workout in over a year. That's insane. I've run 3 times a week every single week for a year. If you told me I would have done that 4 years ago, no chance, no way in heck would I have done that. And I'm proud of that. But I know that comes from the fact that I hired the smartest dude on the planet to mentor me, and I decided to take it as seriously as I could with the time that I have, right, which is 3 times a week. And for me, that's my vehicle for doing it forever. So finishing up, this is already way longer than I expected, but what's next for me? Well, if you ask me at mile 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, I would say that I'm never doing this again. But I'm considering doing one more marathon before my daughter is born in late March, April, to see if I can troubleshoot the cramping. Like, I don't know how much of that is just going to be some additional training or an adjustment to training. I have some hypotheses around it, but I'm strongly considering doing one more marathon just to have a different experience. And you know, sitting here today, 5 days out, I'm feeling better about it. And I am, you know, it's, your mind is a funny thing, man, because the minute the race was over, I couldn't tell you anything about the first 16 miles. All I could tell you was how pissed I was for the last 10. But now, being 5 days out, it's like those memories have come back. And all of the fun that me and my friend Alex were having in the first 16 miles, you know, the beautiful course, the fun crowd, it's funny, all of that is coming back. And it's like that Spartacus meme where it's like, I'm ready to be hurt again, you know, it's like, or I'm not hurt, you know. And so I have a feeling I might do another one, you know, maybe just at the turn of the new year, February, maybe. I'm not sure. If I don't do another one, what I will do is I will take this base of fitness that I've built, and I'll peak for some 5K and 10Ks over the winter to set a couple new PRs before my daughter gets here. And then I'll probably, what's funny is when my daughter gets here, I will take it less seriously, because in that moment, I won't be able to take it as seriously. And if I try to, then I'll shoot myself in the foot. So I will turn that knob down a little bit in the name of consistency. I might go to a type of programming where twice a week I'm just going out for a half hour jog. No watch, no chest strap, you know, just get outside and get moving because that's what's good for me, you know, and you have two kids now. And look, I'm not saying two kids, you can't have a training program. That's not what I'm saying. But I just think in the short term, to make room, time and emotion and priority wise for taking care of this transition or helping Jenna take care of this transition for our family, I'm going to take it a little less seriously. And so, yeah, that might be what I'm going to do. If you are interested, I feel like this might be a decent time to plug this as we wrap up here. If you are interested in hiring a coach to run your first marathon or any race, a 5K, a 10K, 1 mile, half marathon, and you want to do that while you're lifting, you want to make sure your nutrition's in check, I would love to work with you. I don't take on a ton of one-on-one clients. I will be taking on some one-on-one clients in the new year. And you, by the way, I don't just want to work with this population at all. I frankly mostly want to work with more general population who want to, you know, eat better, maybe improve their body composition, lift weights, et cetera, and get healthy rather than like the, I want to run a race population. But I do like having some of those clients too. That definitely scratches an itch that I have. And so if you are listening to this and you're intrigued, you want to run a race, or even if you don't want to run a race, if you just want to, I don't want to use the word hybrid. I hate that. It's not that I hate that term, but that's not what I mean. If you want to make sure that your exercise routine involves lifting and running, and you want to make sure you're doing that, again, it doesn't need to be running. It could be cycling or swimming. Yeah, I'm your man, and I'd love to take on a couple of clients who have those sorts of goals. All right? Thanks for listening, guys. If you have any questions, you're always welcome to reach out. I appreciate you being here. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.